It is going to keep a lot of people away. I know. This was last, or 2 weeks ago, too. I'd gotten the same thing because we were having this off and on, back and forth, snow and ice, and a whole bunch of people had emailed me, can't make it tonight, the weather's too bad. Alrighty then. is what it is, right? I just think it's Mother Nature's way of letting us know who is in charge, you know? And it's not us. She's just reminding us. So, okay. Let's open with a prayer. Simple blessing to whoever your higher power is, whatever you call that, whatever works for you. If it's nothing, that's okay too. There's no expectations here. So, to higher power, universal energy, source, unified field, God, whatever word you choose to use, I invite that power of which we are a part to be a part of this evening with us and allow us to have an open mind and an open heart and take in what works for us and to not take in what doesn't and to keep it that simple. Aho. Okay. Going to start with meditation, and normally we do a silent meditation. And I had intended on a silent meditation tonight until I just did my little grounding thing and got very directed as to what we're going to be doing tonight for meditation. So tonight's going to be a very directed meditation, apparently. So get comfortable. Go sit where you want to sit. I'm going to shut this door back here because we always end up having to shut it anyway. Oh. You can't. I don't know. With the, yeah. Yeah, huh? Good question, Adam. I don't know. and let's also turn the lights out for this. Would you be open to hitting that switch, Earl? Don't kill yourself. Usually it should go. Okay. Now, I want you to all remember, well, you may not remember because you may not have read it. You may have just come because you knew it was tonight. Tonight, the direction was, of course, now I can't see. Oh, I love what I do to myself. Maybe glasses will help. Okay. How many layers of identity make up the story of you was the direction for tonight. So what I got when I was doing my little grounding exercise and getting as present as it possibly is can be for me most of the time, was that it wasn't supposed to be a silent meditation, is that I'm to do a guided meditation and that the guided meditation is going to be on this subject. And then I got shown a picture of what that looks like. So I'm going to try my best to follow that picture that I was shown. But I have no guarantees where this is going, what it's going to come out like. Please feel free to take care of yourself. If it gets too weird for you, do not hesitate to do what you need to do to take care of yourself. Okay? Okay. I still would like to start us with the sound of the bowl. Okay, start by just focusing on your breath, paying attention to whether you're inhaling or exhaling. And you don't have to do it in a special way. You can if you choose. I want you to focus on just riding your breath. You are being breathed. Do you notice that even when you don't think about it and don't pay attention to it, you're breathing? Just allow yourself to be breathed and pay attention to the inhale and the exhale and the rhythm of that. Now shift your attention to your feet and ankles. And tighten them up and then release, relax, and let the tension and stress go. And put your attention to your calves and your knees. Tighten those muscles and release. And give the command in your mind, relax. Move on up to your thighs. And the same thing. Tighten the muscles. Release. Give the command, relax. Up into your buttocks. Tighten the muscles. Release. Give the command, relax. Abdomen. Tighten those muscles. Release. Giving the command, relax. Up into your chest and upper back. Tighten those muscles. Release. Relax. Your hands tight into a fist. Tight, tight, tight. Release. Give the command, relax. Feel the energy just draining out. Your forearms. Tighten those muscles. Release. Your upper arms, shoulders, tighten. Release. Move to your neck and throat. Tighten and release. Relax. And now your face and scalp. Scrunch it all up. Tighten. Release. And give one final command. Relax. Notice the difference in your body. feel the energy in your hands. Some of you can even move inside into the inner body and feel the aliveness, the present awareness that is there. Now, about this whole thing about identities, the egoic structures that we grow up building and creating, and that in the beginning get created on us. I want you to see yourself entering a house. And this house has many different rooms. And each room represents a different part of you. And I'm going to take you through, I'm going to be helping you look at general identities that are the common ones that a lot of us share. Individually, you've also got other ones. So you've come through the front door. I want you to go down the hall and go to the first room on your left. Some of you, when you walk in there, you will see that your identity as or a son is in there. And all the expectations and the beliefs, ideals you gathered from your caretakers, whoever they might have been, and people at school, that began to give you an idea of what that identity as a son or daughter meant. And what I'm going to invite you to do is that when you walk out of this room, you're going to leave the identity of daughter behind. It doesn't mean you disown your parents. It doesn't mean that you're not a part of that. It means as an identity, you're going to be fine. At least for could upright. Just try to come for a little. So as you walk out of this room and shut door behind you, you no longer have a story about being a son or daughter. Now you walk down the hall a little ways, and there's a room to the right. And you open that door, and you go in. It's an identity that you took on as a student. Might have been, you were a really good student. You were smart, you sat in the front row, you did what you were told to do, you studied really hard, you got really good grades, you loved learning. For some of you, maybe school was an escape. Maybe the identity of student was a safe place to go to because of what went on at home. For some of you, the identity of student was always getting in trouble, always being in the principal's office, always getting told you weren't living up to your potential, being told you were a distraction to the other children. But it was still a type of identity. being the bad disruptive student may have even become part of an identity that was important to you. That to turn that around and be the good student was not even considered because it was too far from what you had already attached to. And I invite you that when you leave this room, that identity is left behind. You can pick it up later if you want. I'm not taking away anything. I'm just inviting you to experience for a short little bit what it might be like without that identity as part of your story of you. So walk out of this room, and as you close the door, that identity gets left behind. There's no story of being a student, good, bad, or indifferent. And while you're standing out in the hallway, before we go to another room, I want you to stop and experience a moment. What might you look like right now without those two background stories playing? The type of son or daughter that you believed you were, and the type of student that you believed you were. Without that in your story as identities, what might your life look like? And just see what images come up. If you were hyper-responsible, always the good boy, the good girl, whether as son or daughter or a student, what if that wasn't there? As well as the bad boy or girl, the bad student. If those identities aren't in the background of your story, who might you be? Okay, let's go down the hall a little further. And the door on the left, when you enter this door, for those of you who are parents, when you walk into this room, you will experience yourself as mother or father. If you are not a parent, your identity is however you view that, as childless, as I deliberately chose not to bring children into this world, so that you know, there's an identity that's created around that. So look at your identity as father, as mother, also as possible stepfather, stepmother, if you don't have your own children, but you do have stepchildren. And all the things that you've believed about that. Whether you were a good mom or a bad mom, a good dad or a bad dad. Same with stepmom, stepdad. Or you were a martyred mother or a martyred father. Your kids just didn't appreciate you. They didn't understand all that you'd sacrificed. also take a look at if you are childless and also not a step-parent, how that has become a part of your identity, especially in situations where you are asked, do you have children? And do you have sort of a basic routine answer that you give in explaining why you don't? And see how much of that might be part of an identity, part of your story. As we leave this room, I invite you, temporarily, of course, you're always welcome to pick it back up, temporarily to just leave this identity as mom or dad, stepmom or stepdad, or childless adult. Leave that identity behind in that room. So when you walk out and shut the door, you don't have it with you. It's not a part of your story. So walk out, shut the door. Now stand there for a minute in the hallway. What do you experience? What images do you see without this part of your story? It no longer enters your mind. What images come up? Okay, we're going to do one more door. So walk down the hall a little further. And the next door is on your right. And as you walk in, you see that this room is the room of partnership, where you are somebody's husband or somebody's wife, somebody's significant other, somebody's romantic partner. So this would pretty much apply to monogamous, single, romantic relationships, two people. And see how much the identity of husband, wife, partner, significant other, lover, see how significant that identity has been as a part of your story when you've been in that position, especially if you are now. How much of your story is wrapped up in that identity? How much of your story is wrapped up in complaints about your partner? Or in feeling like you're the one that's always being complained about. That you're the wounded one. That you're not understood. And don't judge it. There's nothing to judge here. Just lovingly and gently, just notice. See what you see about it. Drama, and at times maybe apathy and everything in between, the pain, the laughter, the good times, the bad times, you know, all of that. How much this makes up the story of you. So I'm going to invite you with this one as well. And when you walk out of this room and shut the door, you will leave behind that identity. So walk out of the room. Shut the door, and as you hear it click into place, there's no story of you as husband, a wife, a partner, a significant other, or lover. What does your life look like? What do you look like? Who would you be without that story? Not without your partner or without your spouse or your lover, just without the story. Okay. Now walk back down the hall towards the front door. And you'll notice that as you're getting ready to open the front door, that you can see the energy that is vibrating around the door frame and the threshold that you're going to pass through to go back outside. And I want you to momentarily experience, just by letting go, by surrendering, that when you walk through this door, you're going to let go of the identity of I. That there is no I, no me. Some of you may experience it, some of you may not. If you don't, it's not a failure. If you don't, you simply don't. It's okay. But go ahead and open that door now and walk through that energy that allows you to leave the I, the me, behind. And as you step out onto the porch and shut the door, what does it feel like? Just notice what you notice. And I want you to really take in whatever you're experiencing. So sit down on the steps of the front porch beautiful sunny day. Let the sunlight kiss your face and warm you. Direct your attention back to your breathing, inhaling and exhaling. And I'm going to play the bowl again. And as you hear it, allow yourself to come back to this moment in this room. Y'all close is not rude. And Earl, will you hit the switch for the lights? Yeah, let your eyes come back a little bit more gently than forced. So how was that? Anybody have questions or something they'd like to share? Yeah? Awesome. Okay. You didn't want to come back. Ah, so what did no identity feel like?
It was, didn't sure how to explain it other than a sense of calm that actually we've never experienced quite that way before. Falling on us.
Yeah.
And it was really calm.
And you're, let me clarify something, Michael. I'm asking you to put into words an experience that really we can try to find vocabulary for, but as soon as we start speaking about it, we've diminished it, you know. So I do understand that, but I also think it's important to give voice to it as best we can, you know, especially in the beginning when we're learning this. Awesome. Yeah, really peaceful, huh? I had no idea what I was doing. Anybody else? What did it feel like to have, as you describe, amnesia about not knowing who you were? Was it frightening? Okay, good. lot of energy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Any other comments or any questions?
I felt guilty, but maybe it wasn't being nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I just have to get off this time and get off of there.
Empty. Yeah. Yeah. And it is described sometimes as an emptiness, that there's just nothing, there's no longer anything in the container. Yeah, you just are. Mm-hmm. And it was okay? Awesome.
Also, what you lose to God,
right. Well, the absence of I is the end of separation, you know, that then we can really experience the beingness of that we all are one, we all are connected, you know. It's not just something that we intellectually understand, we can actually experience it. Yeah. Thanks for that, Tom. Yeah.
Well, mine was a little more an experience more intellectually than spiritually, I believe. I thought that I don't have the stuff that I bring from the past. The things that I've been told to believe about myself or about what I should be or what I should not be.
So what did that feel like?
Well,
did you have a sense?
I think everyone else defined it, but the emptiness, the newness. I think it was the newness of starting with rejuvenation.
And did you feel that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was beyond an intellectual experience.
But the reason I say that, because I guess it's
okay. Well, and you know what you experienced. So, you know, I can hear your words and maybe just not fully understand what you're saying. But, yeah. It sounds like, to me, that you did experience it on some level. And that it may have been more than intellectual. But, you know what you felt. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the light side of the child archetype that we all carry. Yeah, which is that innocence and that wonder. Yeah, and the newness. I love that. Yeah, that's a good description. The newness of it. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Whatever. What was your... what you want to share?
Well, the first room was a closet.
Yeah.
It was like a bedroom. And the third room was a really, really fancy, perfect bedroom. And then the fourth room was a bathroom. So partner kids. And I'm standing there looking at myself in the mirror like, great, I'm putting my back part. So I'm in a bathroom. Great. Before you even said anything, I had this, the realms were these rooms. So, and I was reading, I knew it, so Adam said it's above the adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked through the front door and was radiating and the energy and the force that was, I felt rejuvenated, refreshed. And going to a concert, I was so excited and so stoked. I didn't want to sit down, but I had to see something. Yeah. But it was, I felt, I was frightened. You said you wanted to be frightened. I was frightened about not having these stories or identities. I've always...
It's who you are.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not this, what am I?
That's what I experienced in the last
So the fear lightened a little bit? Okay. Okay. Okay.
One more thing I got my memory jogged is that first place I went to, I was in my house that I grew up in. The minute you saw
the
house,
that's where you went.
The back door, I could see the basement door, and then I went in the other room and I used my bedroom, my sister's bedroom, my parents' bedroom. And
wow.
For me, it was more of a disconnect that went along with the family. I was able to, you know, if I can define this, is function in my family that I try to disconnect from is what I was attempting to say to begin with, is that each, I grew my identity from each of my parents plus my siblings. And it didn't, it's not how I want to be a dad.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was.
You got some more to ponder on that one, huh?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I can see it. Okay. So that's apparently how I was supposed to start tonight's talk. One of the quotes that I have here from Ram Dass is, as long as you have certain desires about how it ought to be, you can't see how it is. And I also relate that very much to ourselves. As long as I have certain desires or ideas of how I should be, I'm not going to be okay with how I really am. So the whole idea of self-acceptance, the whole idea of self-love, self-forgiveness and all that stuff kind of bangs up against a locked door, doesn't it? I mean, for me it does. I'm not able to go there if every time I look at me, I'm unacceptable. In most of our human relationships, we spend much of our time, I love this one, much of our time reassuring one another that our costumes of identity are on straight. That's Ram Dass again. He's got to be still my all-time favorite teacher because he's got a delicious sense of humor. And, you know, in looking at the many layers of identity that make up our story, you know, last time I talked about, because there was, somebody had asked me, are we born with an ego? And I had said, no, we aren't. And that's true, we're not. And I've also been in workshops and seminars and classes where people were saying, well, can't we as a race, as a species, learn how to, you know, clear our own selves of our stuff, and then with our children, with our babies, help them not grow those egos and those identities. And in last circle, I talked about how we really do have to kind of get somebody training and become somebodies to then learn how to be nobodies, if that makes any sense. In other words, you can't go from an egoless state and learn the process of shedding and letting go and retaining the wisdom that you've gained from those experiences, right, without going through it. So there is a purpose, I believe. And so, you know, we get born into families and we get taught, first of all, by our parents, you know, that we're somebody. And for each of us, that's different. And that somebody-ness training is, you know, you're a son or you're a daughter, and you're either a good son or a bad son, or a good daughter or a bad daughter, you know. And you pick that up not just by words, but mostly by actions. And then that gets sort of reinforced by any child care that happens, and then once you go into school and the teachers and the other kids, and then you get old enough and you're hanging out at your friend's house, and so you have the experience of how their parents react to you. And so more layers of somebody-ness get put onto you. And most of the time, we don't really, it's not like we have this conscious awareness of it, even as children. And every now and then, though, I bet you can flash back and remember where you did, as a child, have moments of clarity, especially when it came to looking at the adults in your life. Where you would look at mom or dad or a neighbor or an uncle or Aunt Susie or grandma or grandpa or whoever, a teacher, and think, she's really nuts. It's not me. You know? I know you've all had those moments of clarity, because that's in that pure present state of awareness that it's all very clear. But it would also make you go stark raving mad if at 8 years old you stayed in that frame of mind. You wouldn't be able to function in that. So you drop back into the denial, you drop back into the adaptive behavior, most of which is considered maladaptive, you know. So we learn all kinds of dysfunctional ways, and thank God we do, because they're what help us survive emotionally. But it also becomes part of that somebody-ness training. So we learn to either get really quiet and disappear and be invisible. That becomes an identity. You know? Somebody tells me, oh, I can't do that. I am really shy. You know? And I've been told by people who think they're really shy that they also think they have no ego. And it's the ego that believes they're really shy. It's just another way of the ego doing its thing. Okay, just another identity. Not good, bad, just is. You know? And everything in between. There's, you know, if you look at even just the four roles that are played in dysfunctional families, not just alcoholic families, in dysfunctional families, which most of them to some degree or another are. So the more severe they are, the more easier it is, all it is to see it. And that is the roles that kids will fall into, which is the hero child, the scapegoat, the lost child, and the mascot. So the hero child comes out in all kinds of forms. And that's an identity. I'm going to be the good kid. I'm the one that shows everybody in the world that this family is okay. We're okay because I'm getting straight A's, and I'm in football, or I'm in tennis, and I'm doing good, and later on I'm getting a job, and I go on to college, and I, you know, I'm doing everything perfect. And in fact, that's the role of that kid in that family. So the family can point at the kid and go, see, we're a normal family. Look at Johnny. He's awesome. Now, you know why we have problems? Look at Joe. Joe's the scapegoat. And the scapegoat is the one that is acting out all the dysfunction of the family. It kind of funnels itself energetically through that child. So a lot of identity shows up as shadow side warrior, rebel, all the acting out stuff. But that becomes an identity. And once that identity gets put on and you get a sense of power from that identity, what happens is it gets really difficult to let go of. It's like, oh my God, if I let that go, not only who am I going to be, but how am I going to protect myself? How am I going to take care of myself in the world? I mean, this is what I've done all my life. It has worked. I took care of myself. What I would invite you to do as you look at these different roles and these different identities, and you're looking at possibly seeing how can I let this go, ask yourself, is it really still working for me? Because chances are we can say yes, it worked for you when you were a kid. It's how you emotionally survived. It's how you learned how to do life. We live what we learn, and we learn what we see. Not by what our parents say, by what they do. Okay, that's why, I don't know if some of you, especially some of you that are parents, but even some of you that aren't parents, if you've ever said something, especially to a child, and you could have swore that your mother or father was speaking through you, and you're like going, where the hell did that come from? And that's because obviously that was something you heard a lot. And it had an action attached to it that was consistent. And that's how then we get a little wired spot in the brain and a neuron track gets laid down and there it is. Now, that doesn't mean it's permanent. They've already proven the plasticity of the brain can be completely redone. But it takes a lot of conscious effort. So, okay. Let's look at the lost child. The lost child is the one that becomes invisible, is shy, doesn't connect to people very well, you know, wants to, but really struggles out of fear, out of mistrust, always feeling like that distance has got to be there so that I can feel safe, I can protect myself, I got to know where the exit is. I got to have an exit strategy planned all the time. Any of this sounding familiar?
Then you can have more time too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Especially for only children, they play all four roles. Yeah. They'll bounce in and out of all four. Yeah, I do, but it's not a subject that I want to take into this right now because it's a whole different subject. Indigo children and star children and crystal children, yeah, totally different. But it doesn't fit into tonight's talk. And I would go down, it wouldn't be just another different rabbit hole, it'd be a whole other hill. So we'll have to do that another time. With lost children, there's also that identity of that I'm shy, I have to sit in the background, I'm not going to really step up and participate or fully participate. Lost children tend to be ones, lost children and mascot scapegoats tend to not play well with others, run with scissors, things like that. Okay, and there's a certain level of feel good, of rebelliousness that comes with that identity, you know? And then the last one, mascot, is the class clown, the comedian, the one that's cute and funny, the one that will break the tension in a dysfunctional family by cracking a joke or just being cute. So, and that can take on all forms of identities. That can be, you know, the young girl that grows up and has to be cute and sexy all the time. That value, her identity, and without that, she believes she's nothing. And the guy that, you know, has to be the center of attention, has to be cracking the jokes and making everybody laugh. And if he can't do that, he doesn't know how he fits in. So a lot of our really good comedians were the mascots in their family. And the ones that tell us their life story, every single one of them that I've heard about or read about, that's right on the money. They were the mascots in their dysfunctional family. And that's where they gained a lot of that. So it's not like these identities are bad. I don't want you to hear me saying identities are bad. What I want to invite you to do is to look at, who would you be without these stories? who would you be without layer after layer after layer of all these things telling you who you're supposed to be, how you perceive the world, how if you wake up in the morning in the spring and it's snowing. I know some people that wake up and it just lights them up. It's magic. And a lot of people are complaining and cussing up a storm. And I've asked a few of them, what was your parents and the weather like? I mean, if they woke up middle of March and it was snowing in the Pacific Northwest, what would they have done? Oh, mother hated this stuff. She always bitched and moaned. Really? See a thread? Because we have no idea how much we really are like a tape recording. And we're just carrying on and we haven't even stopped to look at, wait a minute, if I push all of that out and now look outside and look at it from just being totally and completely in this moment, no I, no me, no stories, no identity. Now what do I see? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you can. And you were really okay.
Yeah. Because I know in the past that I wouldn't have been. I would have wanted to make sure that she was taken care of.
Yeah. So when you talk about pulling back, and this is what I'm going to try and help Bob with in answering that question. Well, I want to answer your question a little bit better than I did. Is when you pulled back, Tommy, did you experience just kind of being more present, more in the moment?
The ego went away.
Right.
When he was saying that, I thought the ego disappeared. I was in the moment, and I knew, I finally realized after an hour of being there with this woman that I don't even know if she wants anything from me.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can supply anything
that she actually wants or needs.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The only way that you can get out of identity, which is out of ego, just be in present moment. Ego doesn't exist there. You can't get rid of identity because it's like trying to get rid of ego. It's the same thing. Identity is just more specified way of looking at the ego. Okay? So his ego more specifically, the hero part of his ego, that identity that wants to fix and rescue and take care of, at first was running the show. And that's where he was getting the friction and the conflict and feeling frustrated. As soon as he stepped into present moment, it was effortless, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I knew it. I knew it immediately.
Yeah. But that's about practice. That has to be practice. When I started this, it was few and far between. Few and far between. But it's like practicing anything else. If you're going to learn to play tennis, learn to play the piano. You know, I'm trying to learn how to play the violin. I still can't play Twinkle Twinkle yet without errors. But it's better than it was when I started. You know? I mean, practice is what will get you there. And it's not about I'm waiting for the destination to happen. If I'm doing that, then I'm still not present. Right now is all I've got. So right now, where am I? I'm a woman sitting on a table. Period. No. Nope. I do not. Those are roles that I play at certain times, but they're just roles that I play. They're not identities for me. They don't make up who I am. I am not that.
So I guess if I want to be more specific, what if there are a lot of my lifetime ego identification,
most of them are. Same thing. Same thing. Where are you right now? Where are you right now? You're a man sitting in a chair. If it helps, sometimes this helps, rub your hands together. Everybody, just do this for a minute. Just rub your hands together. And now go like this and feel that energy. Cup your hands and feel it. Can you feel it? Rub it some more. I'll get you there yet. I mean, I feel like I got a ball of light between my hands. Okay? And just put your attention there. Now, in this moment, with your attention on that, are any of those identities causing you any destruction, any difficulty, any problem? No. It's that simple. It's just that I think we get real mentally lazy, spiritually lazy, and we want drive-through spirituality. We want quick fixes, you know? I want to get, you know, presence in the bottle and add 10 ounces of hot water, stir it up, drink it, and be done with the whole thing, you know? That'd be awesome. And the ego has a real definite need to matter. And that's what I think all psychotherapy, all therapy, all that stuff is all about, is helping the ego to get tacked back together. It's the ego that's wounded. Doesn't work anymore. And it's like for me, it got to a place where, you know, I kept revolving around and around, bouncing through all these identities of you know, I mean, because I didn't, you know, this was, you know, doing the whole counseling thing, you know, that was a day job, and it was supposed to only last for a short period of time because I had a recording studio and a rock band and wrote my own music, and, you know, that was the deal. That's what I was going to do, right? So I had identity wrapped up in that, and I had identity wrapped up in the counseling insofar as it was my day job, so to speak. But I never did really attach to that one because that isn't what I was going to do when I grew up. Here I am 25 years later, look what I'm still doing. So, which in a way is kind of good because I never did really attach to that, you know. I'm sure you've known, I mean, I've heard this a lot from people, that whether their friends or spouses were counselors in the open field or whether they were counselors in the alcohol and drug field, they never took that counselor hat off, you know. That was their identity, you know, so that no matter what situation they were in, that's what they were operating from, you know. And people I do know tend to want me to be in that identity role across the board. And I don't have the ability to do that. You know, when I'm in the position of doing that, I do that. And when I'm not in the role of doing that, I don't do that. Because it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense to me. But it really is all about just getting into present moment. Right now, if you are in this moment, ego does not exist in present moment. So it's not about getting rid of the ego. You've heard me talk about what we resist persists, right? Well, you push ego away, it's going to come back that much harder. It's going to come back with at least equal force. Just get into present moment. Not aware.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm always working on being aware, and that comes with practice, and that's
Well, being in present awareness, it's like the two are synonymous. So being present, maybe a better way to say it is being aware. Be aware of where you are.
What Tommy's saying is like,
everything and anything.
That's what it's supposed to be.
That's its job. Its job is to survive at any cost. So it will say to me, I mean, my ego will say to me, you're a piece of shit, you should go shoot yourself. It will also say, you're the grandest thing walking on the earth, why isn't everybody bowing down and kissing your feet? I mean, it will do either extreme and everything in between. Because a lot of people will say, well, I don't have any ego because I'm depressed and want to commit suicide. That's the ego. The ego is what wants to die, wants to kill us off because it thinks it can carry on without the meat suit. I finally had to sit down with mine and said, hey, Jack, listen, here's the deal. You need the meat suit to walk around in, so let's not go there anymore. You know? That won't work.
Mm-hmm.
it's easy for the ego to slip into the role through someone else's perception. But if I stay aware, stay present, I'm not going to slip into any role. And again, that's about practice. That just takes practice. So it's not about it's easy. It's habit. It's what we've been doing our whole lives. You know, we show up at mom and dad's, and, you know, I remember when I was 45 years old, showing up at mom and dad's and feeling like I was 6 years old and the bad kid again. You know, and I was even acting out like I was 6 years old again, you know? And it was like, and I caught myself, it was like, what the hell am I doing? I'm 45 years old. I've been supporting myself since I was 18 years old, doing my own thing, haven't counted on them for anything. What the hell am I doing? But that was awareness. That was awareness. And being unwilling to step back into that again. And I remember I went outside, I went for a walk, I came back in, and my mother was still doing her same thing. I mean, she installed the buttons, so she knew where the hell they were, right? And I stayed in awareness. I was just like this observer, and I just was amazed at the machinations she was going through to try to get me to react. And the more I didn't react, the more she upped the ante. And I finally walked over to her, I put my arms around her, and I kissed her on the cheek, and I said, I love you, Mom. You just don't give up for anybody. You are so tenacious. And she was dumbfounded. For the first time, I think, in her life, she couldn't think of what to say. And things shifted at that point. She looked at me like I was dangerous for a while. And I continued to practice, and I wasn't always there. In the beginning, you're not. You know, it's like now when I pick up the violin. You know, it's like I said a few weeks back, the cats are now just staying in the room when I practice. So, you know, it's consistency and keeping up, you know. But, okay, so speaking of good old Eckhart, death is a stripping away of all that is not you. The secret to life is to die before you die and find out that there is no death. And what that means is, what you got a little taste in that meditation is, it's the ego dying away. It's the stripping away of the identities. And just being. Just being. You know, I taught an intuition workshop last weekend, and one of the things that we talked about was how important it is to stay in present moment to do that. Because intuitively, it's from that place that we're connected to Source, that we're connected to the collective consciousness. And then we do intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. That's a promise in one of the 12-step programs. We intuitively know things that we've actually got no reason we should know. It's just like, click, there it is. I don't know why I know that, but I know it's true. I don't even know why I know it's true, but I do. Ever had that feeling, that moment? Yeah, that's what that is. You were in present moment enough to tap into that. Well, think about what life might be like if the more you were in present moment and connected to that. It'd be pretty awesome. Yeah. The past gives you an identity, and the future holds the promise of salvation, of fulfillment in whatever form. Both are illusions. They're just illusions. Because that's the carrot being dangled out here in front of us, and we never get to the carrot. You know? You know? And honest to God, after I've worked really, really hard, if all I'm going to get is a damn carrot, gotta say, I'm going to be a bit PO'd. Just saying. That's not going to work. But it was like what I was talking about earlier, about you don't want to make this be like, okay, I'm going to practice and practice and practice, and this is my goal. Okay, there's another one. In fact, I don't know. See, intuitively I knew that was going to come up tonight too, I guess, because I thought, what is this? As long as identity is, and this is Adi Ashanti, a quote from him, and he's talking about the spiritual movement and people, spiritual seekers and people that are out there trying to have all these different experiences and find God and find peace and find serenity and get healed from their wounds and, you know, the laundry list is forever. And he says, as long as identity is in this movement, the highs and lows experienced by spiritual seekers, even if it's at the spiritual high point that seems very noble, you are never going to be free. There's no freedom in this because there is no such thing as sustaining an experience. By its very nature, freedom doesn't have anything to do with sustaining a particular experience, because the nature of experience is to move. Like a clock ticking, it continually moves. If it's not, and the person is constantly seeking and getting loaded on those things, and that's all they can focus on, he's calling it, and he's a spiritual teacher, he says that's spiritual addiction. That's not real spirituality. And I've worked with lots of those people. He also says identity dictates perception, which is really true. If I change how I look at something, what I look at changes. It's all perception. But if I'm looking at life through the eyes of a mother, through the rebellious daughter, through, you know, being a wife and the kind of wife I think I should be, or being someone's lover or whatever, if I'm looking through those eyes, then that's how I'm going to perceive things. That's the coloring, the shading it's going to have on stuff. And I won't see it as clear. I won't see it for what it really is. Okay? Ooh, tell me what you think of this one. I rather like this. What is commonly called falling in love is in most cases an intensification of egoic wanting and needing. You become addicted to another person, or rather to your image of that person. It has nothing to do with true love, which contains no wanting whatsoever. That's Eckhart. It's like I've told you guys in here before, the Spanish are one of the only ones that honestly, truly honestly, know how to say I love you. Because they say te quiero, which means I want you. And which is really the truth of it. Because to say I love you so much that if your happiness is only going to come from not being with me, I want to give that to you. Please go with my blessing and my love. That's te amo. But they're honest enough to tell each other te quiero. not the rest of us. And I'm not saying just English speaking. I'm saying pretty much everyone else has one way of saying it, and that's it.
Regarding the topic, what about sexuality?
What about sexuality? Well, I like sex. What's the question, honey?
That's
where it's
speaking.
Yeah, really?
Well, your identity and how you identify with.
That's still an identity of ego. Now, I do believe this, and Eckhart's the one I heard this from, and when I heard it, I remember a previous teacher that I had down in Sedona had taught it to me in a little bit different way, but it was the same thing, because when I heard Eckhart, when I read it in Eckhart's book, it was like, oh yeah, yeah, I get that. And that was that people, for example, in our culture, because our culture is not what you'd call supportive of gays, right? Gays and lesbians. So if a person is gay or lesbian, that can give them, because of the painful experience of that, can break them open enough, and that's the painful part, to reach that inside, to experience that Satori that grabs their attention enough to go, oh, that's how I'm built, but that's not who I am. That's how I'm wired, but that's not who I am. And so it breaks them out of the identity. He also says that the shadow side of that can be just the opposite, is that the ego can grab onto that so strongly that the person will run with that as a champion for it, putting it in people's faces, going, ah, you know. And a lot of people do that with a lot of things. You know, it's not just being gay or lesbian that people do that with. People do it with fighting for trying to get attention and money for diseases. So they make that their cause, you know, and it becomes their whole identity. Their ego is totally wrapped up in that. What are we doing for time? This clock's been all over the place. Is it? Well, it is now. Dang, that was a quick hour. Okay, so announcements, real quick. Did I? Oh, okay. Did that? She grasped it. I could see her energy. See, I cheat, Michael. Okay, announcements. I also want to let you know and remind you I am available for Matrix Energetic sessions, Healing Touch, Reiki, Energy Medicine, if you're familiar with that, and individual sessions. My card's over there on the table. And you can also call and just ask questions if you'd like about that. Next Wednesday on March 28th, the Byron Katie thing that Todd does at my house. He has started doing the Byron Katie things following circle, so using the topic. And he's doing it popcorn style, which is awesome. Last week's was killer. He did it all on letting go and did it. It was awesome. So next Wednesday, the 28th, and if you're on the email list, you'll get the reminder. And he'll be doing it on this whole thing around layers of identity, making up the story of you. So if you can make it, I wouldn't miss it. The next circle will be April 4th, 2 weeks from tonight. Tom Compton, who is internationally known for his Byron Katie work, will be here in this church April 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. Flyers are over there on the table for that. I can't recommend that enough. I've been to one of his seminars. It was fabulous. He is phenomenal. And on April 28th, I will be doing the chakra workshop. And the chakra, I'll just give you a nutshell. You know, our bodies are wired to communicate with us and to let us know what's going on with us emotionally and mentally, and that it's all connected. You can't really separate it. And so that illnesses, accidents, aches, and pains that we experience are all part of the chakra system's language, your physical body's way to attempt communication, which when understood allows us to interpret what may be going on a subconscious level that if we deal with, our physical bodies tend to restore to balance and health. So that workshop will be April 28th, and the flyers are over there for that. And I want to read this one last thing and then close with a prayer. And that is, as long, or everything, and this is Ram Dass, Everything changes once we identify with being the witness to the story instead of the actor in it. I love him. He's awesome. Okay, so this is the Lord's Prayer that was translated into English directly from Aramaic rather than through the whole, you know, telephone game. O cosmic birther of all radiance and vibration, soften the ground of our being and carve out a space within us where your presence can abide. Fill us with your creativity so that we may be empowered to bear the fruit of your mission. Let each of our actions bear fruit in accordance with our desire. Endow us with the wisdom to produce and share what each being needs to grow and flourish. Untie the tangled threads of destiny that bind us as we release others from the entanglement of past mistakes. Do not let us be seduced by that which would divert us from our true purpose, but illuminate the opportunities of the present moment. For you are the ground and the fruitful vision, the birth power and fulfillment, as all is gathered and made whole again. Aho. Thank you very much for coming. You give me the opportunity.
Through the snow
and everything. You give me the opportunity to teach what I most need to learn.